What's going on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? It is Monday, October 16th, 2023. And I'm your host, as always, The Pody. Welcome in to another glorious episode of This Week in Sports. Again, couldn't get an episode out this weekend for the third straight time. I really tried. So for three straight weeks now, I'm doing this on a Monday, which has never been done. Unprecedented territory. I forgot over the weekend I had to go help my grandpa. I ordered a new printer, color printer for him on Amazon. It got delivered to his house Friday, so I had to go over there Saturday and set that up. And I went in the mid-afternoon when I was gonna get this episode out to you guys. So we had a crazy weekend. It was not a great weekend in terms of betting. I did go 2 for 3 on my picks from the TTR podcast, although I ended up not betting them because, you know, I was down some money on the 1 p.m. games and I didn't want to risk it. We have no more undefeated teams in the NFL. More on that in just a second. But I want to start with the college landscape and some college football. So enough introductions and enough about me. Let's jump in because it was a wild and wacky weekend for sure. So first off, we had a very good game. The game of the week, really, at 3:30, which was the Oregon-Washington game. Washington, of course, at home. This was the number 7 versus number 8 teams in the country. And I expected a lot of points to be scored in this one. I was going to pound the over, but instead, I saw an opportunity. I saw Oregon at plus money. There was a boost, and I took Oregon. And I only put 25 on it. It would have won me $51 or something like that. So nothing too crazy. But I saw good value there with Oregon. I know they put up a lot of points. I'm figuring Washington, yeah, that while they're at home, can this offense, is this team as elite as people think they are? I know they've been to a college football playoff a number of years ago. But Michael Penix Jr., yeah, he's a Heisman frontrunner. But have they faced anybody good? Oregon, you know, the history, the pedigree. I thought Bo Nix, the veteran leadership, they would be able to get this done. What I discounted was the fact that they would have the worser of the two coaches in Dan Lanning. And Dan Lanning absolutely screwed this one. He screwed the pooch big time, okay? So three times this man went for it on fourth downs. And I say this all the time. I'm all for going for it on fourth downs, right? I'm the biggest believer in going for it on fourth downs when it makes sense. So the first one was at the end of the first half. They were set to receive the second half kickoff. They got down. They were running out of time. And then it was fourth and goal. And they elected to go for it. Okay, down around the goal line. Just take the points. You go to the half, down one, and you get the ball to start the third quarter. They did not do that. They did not get any points, and they went to the half down when they didn't have to be. They got no points, okay? So they go to the half down 4 instead of down 1. And that just kind of snowballed. They did nothing with their first possession to start the second half. They ended up finding themselves down double digits. Granted, they came back. They took a lead. But again, he missed an opportunity to kick another field goal later. And then the final possession of the game, this is the one that just icing on the cake, right? You have a chance to punt the ball and pin Washington deep with, you know, what, a minute 50, a minute 40, whatever it was. Yeah, it's a lot of time, whatever. But just get one stop. And none of these tries were good so far on the day. You weren't able to convert the other two fourth downs. I don't know what made them think they were going to convert this one. They kept trying to roll Bo Nix out. I'm not a proponent of rolling out a quarterback and taking away half the field, because if you roll out and nothing's there, you are absolutely screwed. You are so close to the sideline at this point, there's no way to scramble back or spin back the other way, and everybody, all your receivers are coming towards the right, and they were all bunched up in the same area. It was just not a good decision, and they don't get it. I think they tried to roll them out to the left. They don't get it. They end up giving the ball up, and then Washington scored like two plays later. Michael Penix hit this kid's accuracy is uncanny. He's great. I don't know if he's going to be a good NFL quarterback, but he's got the height. He's, I think, 6'3". He has sustained some injuries in the past. You know, Indiana transfer now at Washington. But give them some credit. They got this win. And, of course, Dan Lanning after the game talks about how, you know, the one at the end of the half hurt and he'll have to reevaluate, and he's always evaluating himself. Boob, boob. Boob. This man ran up the score on Colorado and Coach Prime. And by the way, Deion Sanders is going to remember that for next time. He's going to keep that in the back pocket for sure. So good one there. Yeah, just not good. There's a difference when it comes to being aggressive and being reckless. And Dan Lanning was reckless. And this is not a trait I like to see in a coach. I've been watching football my entire life. I'm 31 years old. I've seen a lot of bad coaches coaching my teams, namely the New York Jets. And I've seen bad coaching. And I've seen Todd Bowles. And I've seen Adam Gase. And go down the line however you will. In big moments, in big games, they crumble under the pressure. It's all, it seems to be that, like, the at-home approach or the fan approach, you know, the guys or the average Joe that doesn't really understand the intricacies and the nuances of the game. And you always hear, you know, there might be a fourth and short kind of play and the coach will send out the punt unit and you hear the fans booing because they want him to go for it, but they don't really know the what's best for the team, right? And in certain situations, as a coach, you just know you got to punt and live to fight another down. And Dan Lanning was taking the fan approach where he was like, okay, well, the fans are going to kill me if I don't go for this, so I just got to go for this, right? No, you don't have to go for it. It was a bad call, and he shouldn't have done it, and it was a bad look, and I'm telling you, this is not something that's fixable. Dan Lanning, this is something deep down innate in his nature that is going to keep happening throughout his entire career at Oregon. And I'm telling you right now, because I've seen it with the likes of these Todd Bowleses and other bad coaches, because they continually, in big moments, in big games, stay making those mistakes and going for the home run in the big moment and being reckless when they should not be. There's definitely a difference between being aggressive and being reckless. And he was totally, totally reckless in this sense. Okay. Right before the half, that's just reckless. You got free points right at the end of the game. You have to punt there. You're giving them the ball in plus territory, pin them deep and hope you get a stop. And they couldn't do it. And they lost the game because of it. So shame on Dan Lanning. You blew this one. And I really should have, you know, won this bet. They missed a field goal at the end of the game, and, you know, it is what it is. They lose 36-33, so this one is on Dan Lanning. Okay, next up, we're going to talk about the sickening debacle, if you will, that was Colorado football. So somehow, well, not somehow, but Colorado was absolutely dominating Stanford on Friday night. And this was a game that I had some intrigue in because I'm a big-time Colorado guy now and a Deion Sanders guy, and I love me some Shedeur Sanders. And I think he is poised to be a really good NFL quarterback. I don't think I've seen anybody come over the top and sling it as well as Shedeur Sanders can. But anyway, they're 10-point favorites going up against Stanford at home. Stanford's not a very good football team. They're a 1-4 team, et cetera, et cetera. And they are rolling. They get Travis Hunter back. They're rolling. They are up 29-0. And mind you, my brother bet Shedeur Sanders 400 yards passing and 4 touchdowns. It was 500-1 odds. It paid, he put 100 on it. It paid 600 if it would hit. And I'm texting him in the second quarter saying, wow, this is looking really good. You might hit this. The only problem was they're up 29-0. It's like, all right, are they going to sit Shedeur in the second half? How's this going to work? If they don't do anything, you might be screwed here. Well, I went to bed feeling comfortable that they you know, going to hold on. Maybe I figured that Stanford would not get shut out. This is not the type of Colorado defense that shuts anybody out. And to my dismay and horror, I woke up to find out that Colorado lost in double overtime to Stanford. And I'm going to try and pull up very quickly my the stats from this game, because it was staggering beyond belief. Okay, so 29-0 at half. Stanford outscores Colorado 19-0 in the third quarter, so now it's 29-19. And then they outscore them 17-7 in the fourth quarter, sends this thing to overtime, and in overtime, double overtime, Shedeur Sanders with the worst pass of his Colorado career, and he throws an interception, had so much time and just floated an interception, and you can't throw interceptions in overtime because of the chip shot field goals from the 25, and that was your ball game. Stanford 46, Colorado 43. Here's some numbers, by the numbers, right? So Shedeur Sanders ended up finishing with exactly 400 yards passing and five touchdowns. Can you believe that? My brother hit this bet because he threw for exactly 400 yards, won $500, just insane, number one. Number two, the Stanford quarterback had 396 yards passing and four touchdowns. See that Colorado defense again. There it goes, showing its true stripes, true colors. No interceptions, no turnovers. And Deion Sanders even said after the game that there was a play in the third quarter that let them back into this game, and it was, I believe, a 97-yard touchdown. And he said he just can't believe that even happened. And he also said he's never been a part of something like this where you blow a game like that, ever. He said from youth all the way on up to professional, he's never been a part of something like that. And not many... It doesn't happen often, but wow, that is a punch in the gut. And then here's another number for you. Receiver number 13 on Stanford had zero receptions in the first half. Elik Ayomanor, I'm butchering this name, Ayomanor, 13 receptions for 294 yards in the second half alone. Let me repeat that. 13 receptions for 294 yards. Oh, yeah, and by the way, three touchdowns.
Oh, my God.
I just don't know how you overcome that. Colorado drops to 4-3 now, and Deion Sanders afterwards, you know, post-game, he had this to say about the loss and about his football team and about the future of Colorado.
I mean, how important are the next maybe 24?
Every game is important.
The next 24 to 48 hours in terms of flushing this and moving past this.
Well, what I just said in the locker room to the team is they got to make up in their mind, are they in love with this game or are they in like with it? Because when you love something, you give to it unconditionally. You give everything you got to it, but when you like it, that's just the button you push. And it lights up in a like. That's what they do on social media. So they got to figure out, do they love it or do they like it?
So, yeah, that was the clip there. Sorry about that, guys. I'll clip that in post. But, yeah, so that's one of those, every week he seems to have one of those quote-worthy pop off your feed type of statements, and that's one of them. And it's really good. You got to find out if you are in love with the game or if you are in like with it, because he goes on to say, like, I'm in love with this game. I put everything, my heart and soul, into this game, essentially, is what he's saying. And that was not a team that did that. And if it to make matters worse, Shedeur Sanders was posting on his Instagram story links to buy his merch. Now, I don't necessarily know or think that may have been Shedeur doing that himself during halftime. You know, because it's a bad look. You know, maybe they're feeling, you know, they're feeling themselves a little too much. They're not even worried about preparing for the second half, et cetera, et cetera. But don't forget, his brother is the one that runs this, all of Deion's social media. So maybe that was him doing that. Coincidentally, that was just not smart, and they probably should have taken that down. But these things happen, and we're going to find out real quick what this Colorado team is made of. And this is probably, I thought the Oregon game was the worst loss that was rock bottom. This might have been worse, and that's saying something. So, yeah, it was a weird weekend of football, let me tell you. Because we go from there to Colorado's rivals in Colorado State, who, remember, they just beat a couple weeks ago in a rivalry game. The Colorado State coach was talking a little smack, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Colorado State, they still haven't won a game playing Boise State. And after an interception with about 7 minutes or so, Colorado State finds themselves down 30-10. 30-10 with about 6 minutes left. They have a little bit of a methodical drive downfield. They end up scoring, get it to 30-17 with 4 minutes and change left, maybe. Okay, from there, they go onside kick. They recover the onside kick. Boom, score another touchdown, 30-24 with 2 minutes and change remaining. You get where I'm going with this? I want to say they tried. I didn't watch the actual game, but I want to say, from what I gathered, they might have tried another onside kick, got a penalty, and either had to re-kick or Boise State took over. Well, Boise State did nothing. They went backwards, ended up being 3rd-19. They couldn't do anything, so they punt with about 40 seconds left. And Colorado State marches down the field to about the 35-ish yard line, maybe the 33 or so. And with 6 seconds left, they have one final Hail Mary play. Take a listen.
Against Boise State, one final shot. Fowler Nicolosi chucking it into the end zone. Everybody is there. Is it caught? Is it caught? Colorado State, Dallin Holker makes the catch. It's a miracle in Fort Collins.
Yep, it was a miracle. And the extra point was good. Colorado State 31, Boise State 30.
Oh my God.
And what happened on that was exactly what you'd like to see on a Hail Mary. He threw it deep into the end zone where the Boise State players did what they're supposed to. They batted it down. The only problem was they batted it forward, and you had the tight end, as you heard right there, right in the perfect spot for the diving catch. And it's kind of like what we saw a few weeks back with the New York Jets, where they tried the Hail Mary and Randall Cobb was kind of sort of there, and the dive, he was a little bit late with the dive. So sort of like that, but yeah, they get the conversion and they win the game. Only in college football could you be down 30-10 with 6 minutes left and come back to win. It's just mind-boggling. So yeah, incredible. Before we get to the NFL and what transpired yesterday, just some quick notes here. In other news, Brock Bowers, Georgia's top dog, if you will, the number one tight end, the best tight end prospect, in my opinion, since Gronk. I'd say even better than a George Kittle. He's undergoing ankle surgery, and he will miss approximately 4 to 6 weeks. So Georgia, they have not looked like a dominant number one team as they have over the last couple of years. So that's something they're going to severely miss him. And then Wisconsin quarterback Tanner Mordecai is going to be out indefinitely with a broken hand. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that my Rutgers Scarlet Knights came all the way back against Michigan State and got the 27-24 win at home in Piscataway in the rain. So that was a really nice comeback win. It was looking very bleak early on in that game. And I'm not saying Rutgers is good, but hey, Shiano's got us at 5-2, so not too shabby. Okay, wanted to mention the MLB playoffs. Rangers and Astros, while while Sunday Night Football was going on, we had game one of the Rangers and Astros ALCS. Astros in the ALCS now for the seventh straight year. We all know how I feel about that. But anyway, it was Jordan Montgomery going up against Justin Verlander in this matchup. Advantage Houston, right? Well, not so fast, because Jordan Montgomery pitched six shutout innings, was very good, and it was the number nine batter, Leody Taveras, who took Verlander deep. It was a two-run shot that turned out to be the game winner. We had a little bit of a scare for the Rangers in the bottom half of the eighth inning with Jose Altuve on first and I believe nobody out. Chapman, Aroldis Chapman, threw a hanging slider, really didn't move at all, and Alex Bregman blasted it into left center, and it looked like it might go off the wall or get out of here, but in fact, it was a left fielder, Evan Carter, making the leaping grab at the wall. He chucked it in as Jose Altuve hurried back to first base. No big deal, right? Well, Jose Altuve apparently forgot to retouch second base, which means they doubled him off. So for those of you listening that are youth baseball players, et cetera, high school players, what have you, this is something very big to understand. If you cross over second base, the ball is caught, and you thought it was going to drop, so you're like, you know, halfway to third, and now you have to go all the way back to first. You can't just cut across the field. Now, I don't necessarily know if he cut straight across, because this is a professional, former MVP, Jose Altuve, right? This guy should know better. He's been playing baseball a really long time. That if he just cut across the diamond back to first, that's just boneheaded. If he actually tried to go back to second and either missed the base or just stepped over it, that's maybe a different story. But either in any case, I didn't see a replay that showed that that angle because I didn't watch this game, but I did read about it and I saw the catch and the throw back in. And he didn't retouch second base on his way back to first, so they doubled him up and the Rangers end up stealing game one 2-0. Okay, so we had game two tonight. Game two today. Well, I say tonight, but it's middle. It's mid-evening, not even tonight. This game started at like 5 o'clock. And 16 pitches in, the Rangers found themselves ahead 4-0 against Framber Valdez. So not looking good for Houston, although I was watching this game during dinner just before, and it is currently 5-2-2. Yordan Alvarez is battling some sort of sickness. I don't know if he's got a cold or flu-like symptoms or what, but he hit another bomb. Just ridiculous, okay? And Nathan Eovaldi's pitching this one for the Rangers. We had Montgomery go in game one. And by the way, Jordan Montgomery has thrown pitched three games as the number one starter for the Rangers this postseason. And they've won every game, I believe. His last start in the previous round wasn't so great, but his first start and this start last night, couldn't have asked for more. And the fact that Brian Cashman traded away Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader, who, by the way, couldn't stay healthy, isn't even on this Yankees team anymore, and helped the Yankees win nothing. Yeah, he was our best hitter in the postseason last year. Woohoo. Couldn't stay on the field. Anyway, traded him for Bader, and Montgomery went from the Cardinals to the Rangers at the deadline, and look what he has done. He has been their number one star. Just a stud. Oh, and I guess Brian Cashman thought that he wasn't good enough to crack the postseason rotation or the rotation at all, and he wasn't a factor. Well, I can tell you, because I am locked in and dialed into Yankee feeds and Yankee guys and Michael Kay and things of that nature and John Boy, and there were some stunned faces. I know a lot of Yankees players were unhappy when they traded Montgomery because he was a close friend of theirs, and I believe Judge did not take too kindly to that, and I don't think he was the only one. Montgomery was beloved here, and I loved Montgomery. He's on my fantasy team all the time. You know, he's a great pitcher, and he was solid every year in the playoffs, and they get rid of him, and nothing they've done since has worked. And so I'm watching him. I'm watching another former Yankee pitcher in Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman wasn't even on the roster last year. They were having such issues. And then he goes to KC on like a league minimum type deal, veteran minimum. And then he gets picked up by the Rangers. And now he's in the postseason throwing, pitching in the eighth inning. And oh my God, it's sickening. And then tonight, Eovaldi's pitching. He was a former Yankee, although he's bounced around everywhere. Watched him win a freaking World Series with the Red Sox. I mean, just everything Brian Cashman touches turns to shit. Sonny Gray was pitching well this postseason. He was a colossal failure and flop in New York. It just goes on and on. And then on the flip side, you'll see for the Mets fans, you know, you had Verlander pitching yesterday in game one, back with Houston, seemingly dominant again. You know, two runs is nothing to scoff at in the playoffs at his age. And you'll have Max Scherzer back for the ALCS, pitching game three in a couple of days. So Mets fans, none too happy, I'm sure, watching that. So, yeah, just that's the state of affairs we're in as New York baseball fans. Sad. One out in the top of the, no, bottom of, the, yeah, top of the sixth. Sorry about that. Marcus Semien is up and a man on third base. Leody Taveras tripled to deep right center. All right. Let's move on. Got some golf to give you real quick. Lexi Thompson, if you missed this, she became just the seventh female golfer to play in a PGA Tour event. The Shriners Children's Open. And despite shooting a 69 in the second round, she just missed the cut. I think the cut was at 3 under, which was very, very low score. For a cut, usually it's around even, maybe plus one, minus one. So she just missed the cut with that 69. Very impressive nonetheless. She was out driving some of the men. And yes, she was playing from the men's tees, which is just crazy to think about, which means she had to be driving the ball around 300 to 310 yards, which is crazy. She was vying to become just the second woman ever to make a cut on a PGA Tour event. She did not do that. As for the winner, also extremely impressive, my man Tom Kim, at 21 years, 116 days old, he is the youngest at the time of his third PGA Tour win since Tiger Woods in 1997 when he did it at 21 years and 13 days. Now, Tom Kim, very impressive because he defended his title. He went in as the favorite to win this event, and he won it. I think he had a monster either Friday or Saturday, because he shot like a 62 or something, just had a monster day. And two of his three wins now have come at this event, just unbelievable. And he's one of the young golfers to keep an eye out for. South Korea kid, his dad was a pro. And funny thing, I was just looking him up. His real name is not Tom. It's actually Kim is his first name. And then, you know, one of the crazy long, like Asian names, but he got the name Tom from Thomas the Tank Engine. So that's kind of cool. And he's a funny dude. They interviewed him afterwards, like how he's going to celebrate this event is in Vegas and everything. And basically he said he's not going to go take a red eye to go home. He thought about that, but he wants to go back and finish some really delicious chocolate that he got on a trip over to Europe. And he's been just relishing finishing that chocolate. He said he's going to go finish up the chocolate and then go to bed early, wake up at 3 o'clock and take a 6:30 flight home. So I thought that was pretty funny. Just a very down to earth kid, 21 years old, just incredible. And I hate to say it, but I wish I started playing this sport when I was, you know, like 3 or 4 years old instead of baseball, because there's no doubt in my mind I'd be a professional at this stage of the game. And I'd just be living my best life, because I play, you know, what, a handful of times, 25, maybe 30 times a year. I've started to play a little bit more, and I'm slowly but surely getting better. A couple weeks ago, just in Disney, shot a 41 on the back. These were with rental clubs, people, with rental clubs on a Disney course that I've never played before, and I shot a 41, and the putting was my biggest struggle, the putting and the chipping, because I didn't have my handy-dandy 60-degree or my beautiful Kirkland nice weighted putter there. So, yeah, and still, impressive nonetheless. So it's only a matter of time before I'm shooting in the 70s, mid-70s. It's only a matter of time because in just a brief amount of, in just a short period, I'm not going to, you know, just drone on about how good a golfer I am. But yeah, I shoot consistently in the 80s. I never rarely shoot in the 90s anymore. And if I do, it's because I'm frustrated. People are slow in front of me and lack of concentration. But for the most part, I've just been shooting straight 80s. I've been hovering around the 85s, and there's a lot I could clean up in there. And I felt like for the last year and a half, 2 years, my swing hasn't even been there. But for some reason in Disney, something seemed to click, and my iron game was just pure. I was hitting those things pure. So anyway, we'll move on now. Let's get to the NFL, because I had a big bet going into the weekend for the 49ers. So the 49ers and the Eagles were the final two undefeated teams in the NFL. And there was a bet on DraftKings that you could place a wager on which of those two teams you would think would be the last undefeated team. And both of them were the same odds, minus 110, minus 110. So I put $250 on the 49ers to be the last remaining unbeaten team because they're playing the Browns. I found out after I made this bet a couple days later, I made this bet maybe Friday, no Deshaun Watson in this game. I knew they were coming off a bye, but I was feeling really good about this. And I'm like, this is perfect. They just have to win the game, move on. Eagles were playing the Jets. I expected the Jets to lose, right? But the Eagles have a tougher schedule. They have to play Miami next week. Then they have to play Dallas. They have to play Kansas City. I mean, their schedule is a gauntlet. And I, even before I saw this bet and made this bet, I was saying 49ers will be unbeaten going to Philadelphia on December 3rd. I truly believe that. And I didn't even see this bet yet. So it was a no-brainer for me to make this bet. And then we go into the game and it starts to get sloppy and rainy. There's a fight pregame and everybody's jarring with each other. And one by one, the dominoes start to fall. Now, the Eagles played the Jets at 4:25. This Niners game was at 1 o'clock. And I also did something stupid. I had bet the Ravens, the 9:30 game. I had parlayed them with the 49ers, -4.5 and -9.5. And what I didn't like was the fact that the spread was over 10, and then on game day, it dropped to 9.5. And when I see that, that's a sign as a bettor, a savvy veteran gambler like myself, that's a sign to go the other way. And I went against everything, every fiber of my being that said to not touch this and bet that high of a spread when it dropped. And I ended up putting another $100 on the 49ers to cover the 9.5. So I didn't even hedge my bet. And because I don't hedge, right? So we're playing this game out, and Deebo Samuel goes out immediately. Goes down. Shoulder, I believe, whatever it was. And so he's gone. I'm like, okay, great. Here we go. But the 49ers, they roll down. CMC gets an easy touchdown. 15 straight games with a touchdown, right? And that ties the record. O.J. Simpson, a couple other guys have that. And everything looks fine. I believe the 49ers and Browns both exchanged missed field goals. Jake Moody missed a field goal. Huh, we'll come back to that. So that's one. They end up going up 10-0. I'm like, all right, not great, but okay. Next thing you know, and by the way, P.J. Walker's starting this game for the Browns. So I'm like, come on. This guy's been in the AAF and all sorts of different leagues and such a journeyman guy, was with the Panthers, right? And he's actually not looking all that bad. Yeah, he throws a pick, and there was a controversial play late in this game in the fourth quarter that really bothered me because he clearly fumbled. He was getting sacked. He tried to get rid of the ball. It was a fumble. They ruled that it was incomplete, and so I guess they couldn't overturn it. There was not enough video evidence to overturn it, which bothered me severely because I thought there was. So anyway, the 49ers, Brock Purdy throws an interception, and now all of a sudden we're in danger territory. I'm like, okay, I'm going to lose my 9.5-point spread bet that I just made today, but at the same time, the 49ers, please just win so I don't lose $250. Please, God. The Browns take the lead. Dustin Hopkins wasn't missing field goals in the second half. He was right down. He was right on the money every time. So they take the lead by two, I believe. Yeah, they go up by two. And the 49ers get the ball back. And Red Zone was bothering me because, yeah, this game was on Fox, but I was watching mostly Red Zone for other reasons. And Red Zone, every time they showed the game, it was the Browns on offense. And I'm like, what is going on? And I know Dre Greenlaw was out, which in hindsight was obviously a really big loss for them, not having him in this game. And I will be cautious of that in the future. But they get the ball back. There's sizable amount of time, minute 50, whatever it is. They have plenty of time. So then the 49ers start doing their thing. Now, Brock Purdy, by the way, looked very average in this game, and I'm starting to sort of see like his kryptonite and maybe why he went in the seventh round as Mr. Irrelevant. His arm strength is just not there. He's very accurate. He can read plays very quickly. He's got the cerebral part of it. Don't get me wrong. He's good. He's very good, but with this pass rush and Myles Garrett and stuff, they were getting to him and they were causing him some problems, and the rain was definitely causing him some problems. And I'm not 100% sure if he has a small hand, but that also could be a reason why he went late, because we know we all love to talk about quarterbacks and their hand size and what guys will do to stretch out those fingers and stuff for their draft prospects. But they start moving the ball, you know, two-minute drill. Any team can move the ball in a two-minute drill, right? So they start moving it. They get down into field goal range, and I'm not feeling great because it's Jake Moody. He's already missed one, and he's a rookie kicker. This could be a factor. Mark my words, this could be a factor for the 49ers in the playoffs or late in this season. Having a rookie kicker is a mistake and a half, I'm telling you right now. So they get down. They have a timeout. There's like 6 or 8 seconds left, whatever it is. And they run up and spike the ball. And I was fuming, because this was a 41-yard field goal still. And it's a rookie kicker. I'm like, dude, one more play. They could have gotten one more play off. And I can't quite... Yeah, they did spike it, I believe, right? So the clock was running. So they couldn't have done a quick run play. Well, I mean, they got up to the line quick enough. They could have probably snapped it and got a few more yards on a QB sneak or something, or just a handoff, possibly. They didn't want to risk that, but I would have thrown a quick out to the sideline, tried to get 3, 4, 5 more yards and make this an even easier chip shot. Well, Kyle Shanahan doesn't do that. They just spike the ball with 7 seconds left or so. Jake Moody trots onto the field for the game-winning field goal to keep my bet alive. Now, I'm already down 100 on the first bet because they ain't covering no 9.5. And this is what Jake Moody does to keep the 49ers' unbeaten season alive from 41 yards, down 19-17 for the win.
Moody.
And actually, as I'm looking at that, he missed the field goal and there was still 6 seconds left. So maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe there was more like 13 seconds left when they spiked it. Either way, you had time to run another play and get a few more yards. And if Kyle Shanahan did that, the kick barely missed. And blame the weather, whatever you want. I mean, he kicked at Michigan, so weather shouldn't be an issue, but he just barely missed it. So now I'm like, oh boy. I'm down over 350 on the day, and I never expected to lose this 49er bet because I thought this was the golden goose. I thought this was going to be such an easy lock, and that's the problem with betting, right? And so now I'm sitting there thinking, wow, I screwed myself because the 49ers, even if the Eagles were to lose somehow to the Jets, the 49ers lost first, so there's no way I could win this bet. And I stood to win $238 off of this bet, which would have been a nice chunk of change, right? So, we battle on. The 4 o'clock games come, and it's my New York Jets, and I'm down a bunch of money, so I'm thinking, okay, I can't put any more money on these bets. My mind is racing. I don't know what to think. I can't think straight. I can't see straight. So my two picks, my 1 and 2 point picks, were the Rams -7 over the Cardinals and the Detroit Lions -3 against the Buccaneers. And both of those hit easily, although the Rams put on a show in the second half. It was much closer in the first half. But the Detroit Lions, a lot of people saying this might be the best team in football right now after the 49ers lost. And now, of course, we know the Eagles ended up losing. So anyway, I don't place those bets. Those were easy locks. If you listen to TTR, hopefully you heard my picks and got those. My three-pointer on Buffalo was shocking. I'll get to that in a bit. And if you listen to TTR, when I said those picks, I kind of wished I had taken Miami instead. And Miami, although they found themselves down 14, they came all the way back and they blew out Carolina by 21. They blew them out so badly that Mike White came in the game, threw a pick six, but then led them on a touchdown drive as well. So I don't even know where I'm going with this. Okay, back to my Jets. So the 49ers lose. The Eagles are now the last unbeaten team in football, right? Well, wrong, because they were also beaten, and I really still don't know how to do it, but they were beaten by none other than
the goddamn Jets.
That's right. The goddamn Jets. J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. That's right. My beloved New York Jets. Pulling out wins. Listen, between Rutgers on Saturday and the New York Jets on Sunday, pulling out come-from-behind wins, this is not something that is supposed to happen for these two teams, especially this Jets team. And listen, after the Eagles went on a 19-play drive, I believe it was a 19-play drive, the longest of the season, and they methodically go down, and then on fourth and goal, Jalen Hurts rushes for that touchdown, which, by the way, I stand firm, it was not a touchdown. They overturned this, but Jalen Hurts dives for the end zone, and I'm pretty sure that his receiver, Zacchaeus, literally pulled the ball from his hands, fumbling it into the end zone, which you can't do, and somehow yet they still reversed it because the Jets never get these calls in their favor, and they gave them the touchdown. And at that point, I said, that was death by a thousand cuts. This game is over. And then from there, the Jets get a field goal, you know, the typical New York Jets offense. They can't really run the ball, things of that nature. And then Philly goes up 14-3. They hit DeAndre Swift over the middle on a little nice angle route or so, and they go up 14-3. And from there, I'm like, all right, here we go. This is going to be a blowout. And the Jets just kept coming and coming. This was like a boxing match. They kept wearing the Eagles down round after round after round. And just slowly but surely, the Eagles started to crack. And then they started to crack a little more. And then the ice just shattered, and they fell through it, right? Because you had the one fluky interception to Goddard that was punched out, and then Quinnen Williams gets his first career interception, okay? And then you had the other one. Now, the Jets just kept making adjustment after adjustment, and Ulbrich was just phenomenal with his defensive play calling. And the Jets were without their top two corners. They were down to just four healthy corners. Michael Carter, one of the better nickel corners, was forced to go outside and guard the likes of A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. They were calling up guys from the practice squad to play corner, and they were just giving things up underneath. Yeah, A.J. Brown got his 125 yards, but that's about it. And Jalen Hurts, on the second interception, he had two guys underneath, and he could have hit the checkdowns, but the Jets defense was just giving him all sorts of fits and pressures. And even when they weren't pressuring with three and just four men rushes, he still felt pressured to move up in the pocket and step into things. And he gets hit on the arm and the ball pops up and Bryce Hall gets the interception. That's number two. And then number three, which to me, this was mind-boggling. The Jets couldn't score a touchdown all day. It's 14-12. There's, what, two, three minutes left, whatever it is, and you have a third down. And I know what the Eagles are trying to do. They're trying to pick up the first down by throwing the ball and ice it. If they run this ball, force the Jets to maybe call a timeout, and then you punt, the Jets have to go down and get a field goal, which, yeah, they've been doing, but you would take your chances with this Eagles defense against Zach Wilson, right? Well, they try to throw, and this was a Zach Wilson-level pass by Jalen Hurts, and Tony Adams, I think he thought Tony Adams was on the Eagles. He throws it right to him. Tony Adams runs it back inside the 10, and the very next play, Breece Hall, Breece Hall runs it in for the touchdown. The Jets have a bunch of guys with similar names. You've got Bryce Huff, Bryce Hall, Breece Hall, two Michael Carters. I mean, it's a mouthful, so sorry about that. Breece Hall with the interception, the second one. Breece Hall gets the ball, first play. I think this was just under 2 minutes, and he runs it in. And many speculated that the Eagles let them score. Well, great. If the Eagles let them score, so be it, because it was a boneheaded move. You should have held us to the 3 points, and then you could have kicked the field goal to win it. But anyway, some say we scored too quick. You can't buy into that. I'm of that mindset for the most part, but not when you have such a stellar defense. I say don't score too quickly when you're playing Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, there's 13 seconds on the clock for Mahomes. A couple years ago, playoffs, Bills. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we get the touchdown, and now we need to go for the two-point conversion to go up six. Not that it really matters, but should the Eagles maybe go down and get a touchdown, they could get a penalty, they could miss the extra point, whatever. So we go for the two-point conversion, and Zach Wilson hits Randall Cobb over the middle, who takes a punishing blow, holds on for the two-point conversion. I thought it could have and should have been a late hit. I was not happy with that. There was a couple of calls in this game that did not go the Jets' way. There was the one deep ball to A.J. Brown down the sideline. It was pretty good coverage. He catches the ball, and I thought as he went out of bounds and fell, he bobbled the ball. The Jets challenged it as they should have, and it was not overturned. I was very disappointed in that. Just saying, but it didn't go our way. But yet, so the Jets score. There's about a minute 50 left, and quickly the Jets are putting pressure on Jalen Hurts, and it comes down to a 4th and 8. And for whatever reason, they were running some weird routes. Nobody was open at the first down marker, and Jalen Hurts is forced to throw it deep. And much like what happened with Josh Allen and this Buffalo team, they heave one deep on 4th down, and you know, we bat it down into double coverage, and the Jets win this game. A couple kneel downs later, the Jets freaking win the game. So 12-0 all time were the Eagles against the Jets. That was the best win-loss percentage against any team, you know, any opponent versus another team, and the Jets bucked the curse. So the New York freaking Jets, who lose Aaron Rodgers 4 plays into the season, come into this game as 6.5-point underdogs, another spread that was swinging towards the Jets' favor. But I thought they had no chance once Sauce Gardner was ruled out with a concussion. So him and DJ Reed out with concussions. Okay, we get to the stadium, and we see pregame. Is that what I think it is? Is that? Oh, yes, it is. Aaron bleeping Rodgers on the sideline, throwing and catching a football with no crutches, no nothing. If you didn't know any better, you would say, oh man, Aaron Rodgers getting loose pregame, you know, right before he's about to suit up, put on the pads, and go to work. Aaron Rodgers is defying the odds. And I don't know, people can joke about the ayahuasca and his age, and this man is on a mission. Robert Saleh said it best. Usually with the Achilles, he presumes it's going to be a 2-year injury. We have gotten closer and closer with medical, you know, professionals and science and data and different things where players are coming back quicker than ever. And he kind of took that Mamba method, that Kobe Bryant method, got the surgery immediately, like 1 or 2 days later, went to Kobe's doctor, or Eletrage right there in LA and everything. And whatever rehab he's been doing, he's defying the odds. He's no longer wearing crutches. He's in sneakers. He's walking, you know, gingerly, but he's walking. Like, it's unbelievable. He's flicking the ball, passing it, you know, nobody's helping him. And, you know, Saleh even said he asked him if he wanted to felt more comfortable up in the booth or on the field or on the sideline during the game. And he said he wanted to be on the sideline with his guys. And I truly do believe in manifestation and having him there and guys seeing that he's defying the odds at his age and that he's walking without crutches and that he's just there to give them that emotional boost, that leadership role. Guys seeing him thinking that there's a real possibility and a real sense that he's going to try to come back should this team make a playoff push. It's phenomenal, and it gave them all the energy they needed. It helped against Kansas City a few weeks ago on Sunday Night Football, and I think that's really what has jump-started this, is his presence and that veteran leadership, having a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback there to support his team and to help them and to help a young Zach Wilson mature and grow. Because Zach Wilson, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? This is the 3rd straight week three straight weeks that he's played really, really well and one interception in the last three games. And then you have Robert Saleh saying we embarrassed every quarterback we faced so far this year. Granted, yes, you faced the gauntlet of quarterbacks because that's what he said. You didn't embarrass Dak Prescott. I know what you were trying to say. I wouldn't say you embarrassed Mac Jones. Mac Jones has been brutal. He wasn't great in that game, but you still lost. You did embarrass Josh Allen in week one for sure. Three interceptions. That's bad. You embarrassed Jalen Hurts for sure yesterday. And then Russell Wilson has just been Russell Wilson. He's been embarrassing himself for the last year and a half. But, yeah, them's his fighting words. But I kind of like it. It gives the Jets some personality, whether or not that's ammunition and fuel, adds fuel to the fire for later on down the line. So be it, because people were talking about that today on the radio. If the Jets have to face the Chiefs or the Bills sometime down the line in the playoffs, bring it on, because that would be, especially if we're playing the Chiefs, that would mean we're playing them in the divisional round, which would be the second round of the playoffs. So that would be awesome. Yeah, we get to play Buffalo one more time in Buffalo, but I don't think, as a Jets fan, I'm all that scared of Josh Allen anymore, because we seem to have his number, and we're only going to get better and better. Well, listen, we have the bye week. We go in, we'll try to get healthy, get our corners back. Garrett Wilson sustained a couple, an ankle injury, got banged up twice with that ankle. So get these guys healthy, and then we'll go to work. We have the best freaking defense in the league. Bryce Huff has been phenomenal. Quincy and Quinnen Williams have been great. Jermaine John, like, these guys are just in and out. These guys have stepped up, and the back end of that defense from the linebackers, CJ Mosley doing his thing. I mean, it was an unbelievable game. One of the best wins in my life as a Jets fan, besides the playoffs, the game-winning field goal in the playoffs against the Colts, beating the Patriots, you know, the Bart Scott, the interview with Sal Powell after that game, right? All the years of heartache and pain, and I think that was one of the best Jets wins I've ever seen, especially since I didn't expect us to win that game. I did not expect us to win. So, no more undefeated teams, and so I'm sitting there thinking, all right, let me check DraftKings for the hell of it, because, you know, both teams did lose. Like, what are the chances? And son of a bitch, the bet paid out. So although I didn't win $238, I only lost $11 from the bet. So thank you, Jake Moody. You missed a 41-yard field goal, which cost me $238. But thank you, New York Jets, for saving me $11. Thank God. All right. So I will take that any day of the week. I'm down on the weekend, but hey, we're going into Monday Night Football. I already locked up high score in my fantasy league. I have the least amount of points for in my league, although I'm now 3-3, got back to 500, and I shouldn't have the least amount of points for. It's been some erroneous and some seriously fireable mismanagement of my team. Last week, I didn't start Zach Moss with Jonathan Taylor making his debut. I didn't start Zach Moss. That was an issue. He went on for a career high number of yards and fantasy points. I didn't start Joe Burrow, who I had just acquired in a trade. Had I started those two guys, I would have won my matchup last week, and I'd be sitting at 4-2 right now. And so for the couple of weeks I've mismanaged my team, my bench has gone off almost every single week. I've screwed up something. But yesterday, Kyren Williams, who had 0.4 points, 4 yards rushing in the first half, Sean McVay said, all right, we got to show this Cardinals team that they should not be hanging with us in this game. And they went to half and they listened and they said, all right, we got to run the ball more. And they came out on that first drive, 9 straight rushes. Kyren had 52 yards himself. By the way, I just traded for Kyren a couple weeks ago, and goes for 52 on that drive. And then they just keep pounding him. And by the way, I'm watching the Jets game while all this is happening. And in the end, Kyren Williams, 150 plus rushing yards and a touchdown, virtually all of it in the second half. This guy is a top-tier fantasy running back, and God darn it, he got banged up. I think he tweaked an ankle. He finished the game, was not in a boot afterwards or anything, but he's going to get an MRI, which is a little bit sketchy, kind of scares me. If he goes down, I'm in trouble. But I have 3 of the top 7 running backs in fantasy. three of the top seven. And if Joe Burrow can just turn back into Joe Burrow a little bit, I'll be okay. Although I got to start Love next week because Burrow's on bye. But hopefully it helps him get that calf worked on and relax it a little bit. And it's gotten better and better each week. Because if I can get some production out of Burrow going forward with the addition of Kyren, that trade of Jalen Hurts is just looking going to look better and better and better. So, yeah, I'm getting back to 3-3. I'm going to be in seventh place in the league, back to the middle of the pack, one spot out of the playoffs. I'm in a phenomenal position. I've just got to keep it going. And I've got 100 and how many points do I have this week? 129, I believe, which is the most in the league. And the only guy that can really catch me would be he has 116 points, and he has Josh Palmer going. So he's 13 points behind me, but guess what? I have the Dallas Cowboys kicker, Brandon Aubrey, playing for me, and I should expect to get between 8 to 10 points, maybe even more, if this is as high scoring as I believe it's going to be. And by the way, I would not touch this game except to bet that over, maybe throw in an Austin Ekeler anytime touchdown since he is coming back from injury. If I had to say, I would take the Cowboys, because after getting embarrassed by the 49ers, they should come out with some vengeance. And the Chargers and Brandon Staley, they just don't know how to win big games. So I would probably take the Cowboys here. And I believe Dallas is favored in this game. Dallas is 1.5 point favorites, although I believe that line has dropped in favor of the Chargers, LA. So that's that. But yeah, so I kind of been running on a tangent here about my fantasy team and whatnot. But yeah, the Rams, they get a big win. And then, yeah, let's talk quickly about the Sunday night game. So Sunday night football, Giants, Bills. This was my 3-point pick. I got this at 14 because when we picked it on Wednesday, it was at 14. This was before Daniel Jones was the Giants announced he would not start. Tyrod Taylor would. And then you had the fact that Saquon Barkley was a game time decision. So I don't know if by the time Saquon got announced as a starter that he was playing, if this line dropped at all. I'm not too sure. I don't think it did. I think it was at about 15. And it was in Buffalo too. And Daboll going back to Buffalo, there was some talk like maybe the Bills don't want to embarrass him or anything. But it should have been a lot of what they had already seen from Daboll, although the Giants offense just can't score anyway. And I was not really watching much of this game. I was keeping an eye on it, but it was only 6-0. And it wasn't Bills. The Giants were pitching a shutout, 6-0 of the Bills. They finished the half. They 6-0 at the half. The Bills had gone, I believe, 60 games or something scoring without being shut out, or 60 quarters maybe, something, some ridiculous stat about the Bills. The Daboll, I guess, he had some secrets from his times in Buffalo. He knew what they were going to do. And Josh Allen started to look a little shaky again, like Josh Allen we have seen in a number of games of late. I don't know what's going on. But they got the touchdown to take the lead in the third quarter, I believe, or the fourth quarter, whatever it was. And then they go up, 15-9 or 14-9, whatever the hell low scoring game. It was so low scoring and boring, but it turned out to be a doozy in the end. So 14-9 Bills, and you had the debacle. Apparently, I didn't see it, but Tyrod Taylor can't be very smart. He checked to a run at the end of the first half, and I don't think they had any timeouts, or I don't know what happened, but they couldn't get a field goal because of it, and he cost them 3 points there, which proved to be consequential because at the end, they needed a touchdown down 5, and they had a fourth down. He converted it over the middle, and then they had PI in the end zone and put the ball at the 1-yard line, but they were running out of time, and then Tyrod Taylor tries to run it. They had 7 seconds left. He tries to step up in the pocket. A guy whiffed on him. He got his hands on him, but he slipped through. Otherwise, he gets sacked, and the game ends, and he somehow ran to the sideline, stiff arms, gets out of bounds with 2 seconds, so they have one final play to the end zone, and that might have been the play. Yeah, that was the play that got flagged in the end zone that put it at the 1. And then So they had one untimed down. They tried to fake, and then they tried to go over the middle into the end zone to Darren Waller, and it was clear as day. The throw was high. I presume the throw was high because you had the fake handoff, and guys were in his face, and he had to, you know, throw it high to get it up and over from a batted ball. And because he got it high, Darren Waller had to go up for it, but he was being grabbed. His whole shoulder was being, his shoulder pad, his jersey was being grabbed. The ref, of course, doesn't throw it because, you know, Bills are the home team, and Bills are the, you know, one of the better teams in the league, so we can't have them lose to the Giants. So the Giants should have had another untimed down, one more play from the one with no time on the clock, and they weren't afforded that. So the Giants end up losing 14-9 to the Buffalo Bills. So the Bills didn't even come close to covering the 14 that I needed, or the 15, which was the actual spread. So I went 2 for 3 with my picks, got my 1 and 2 point picks. Those hit pretty easily. So another 3 points for me. I'll still remain in the lead with the boys on the TTR podcast because I've been having just a phenomenal year picking, making my picks. But I think this is the second time I whiffed on my 3 point pick and got the other two. So not great when you, easily get the 1 and 2 pointers and you're like, damn, why didn't I make those the three? But I did mention on the TTR podcast, I wish I would have taken Miami with my 3 point pick instead. So yeah, a lot to unpack there in week 6 of the NFL season. It was just chaos. There are no more unbeaten teams. So the 72 Dolphins can rejoice if any of them are still alive. Your unbeaten record stands for yet another year, and it's going to be really hard to beat. There is so much parity in this league. Thursday, we've got the Jaguars and Saints on Thursday Night Football. It's a bit of a doozy. I might have my fantasy basketball draft during that game. We're still trying to work out though that schedule or when we're going to do that draft. Saints haven't been really good. They lost to Houston. And then the Jaguars, although they got a win against Indy, their quarterback in Trevor Lawrence is dealing with a knee injury. They're saying it's not serious, but his status for Thursday, because it's only a couple days away, is up in the air. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. And like I said, tonight's game, I expect a lot of points. I'm taking the Cowboys. I'm not betting this game, but I would lean towards the Cowboys just because they're coming off that loss, that poor that beatdown at the hands of the 49ers, and they got to get back on track. They did it last time. They came off a bad loss to the Cardinals. So I expect them to bounce back and beat the Chargers in a big way. And as for the Chargers, look, I know they're coming off a bye. Maybe they're getting a little healthy. Yes, they get Austin Eckler back, and shame on me should they win, and I'm telling you to take Dallas. But sometimes teams come off a bye, and they're very flat, and they lose some of that rhythm, and it takes them a little while to get going. And if they get punched in the mouth by the Cowboys D, then look out. Herbert's going to have a long night. So, yeah, that's my pick. Let's go. Let's get it. Hopefully we have a better week in week 7, and my fantasy team keeps on rolling on. So with that being said, guys, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm the Pody. I'm signing off. I make no promises. I will try to get an episode out Saturday because I got another football game to work on Friday. So I will try my darndest to get an episode out on Saturday. And for those of you looking for picks, for some betting advice, et cetera, please jump on over to our sister show, Through the Ringer, TTR for short. Through the Ringer, it's available on every single platform that you will get, you know, that you listen to podcasts on. Google, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the big ones. It's there, just as this one is too. And you can listen to myself, the Phantom Swami, and Mr. Maurer himself give out our picks. So yeah, tune into that and tune into more of This Week in Sports. Have a good night, everybody. This is the Pody signing out.